This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The worst that drugs can do, the war on drugs, the criminal justice system, and the criminalization approach cannot and will not be the right way. It does not make sense to put the resources into the hands of the prison industrial complex. You want money? We want money for treatment and education and health care and housing? Then we can't have the fastest building prison system in the world. We can't have a prison industrial complex absorbing $100 billion a year. We cannot have such a system.
This is a special announcement to all Drug Truth Network listeners. Cultural Baggage has moved to Sundays at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. It will be followed immediately by Century of Lies at 7 p.m. Central, and it will feature a new segment.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1. The time is 3 o'clock. Stay tuned for the New Capital Show with Leo Gold.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the new Capital Show. The new Capital Show. It's the same as the old New Capital Show, but it's newer. It's at 3 p.m. and it is 3:02 here in the studios of 90.1 KPFT FM, Houston, Texas. It's great to be with you in this new time slot. I look forward to continuing to enjoy the company of all of you who used to listen at 10 o'clock a.m. on Thursdays. And all of you who have not yet heard the New Capital Show, I look forward to being with you as well. I guess this is usually during the school year, this is carpool pickup time. So I'm looking forward to having lots of relationships with parents picking up kids from school. We're going to take your calls a bit later in the show. 713-526-5738. For those of you not familiar with New Capital Show, I would say New Capital Show, and I don't want to exaggerate here, but New Capital Show has become in the last 6 to 7 years the premier show focused on economics in the city of Houston. That is to say, general economics. We talk about economics and how economics is threaded through so many different issues, from politics to environment, to technology, commerce, even spirituality. And, of course, that is a huge, huge topic now, as we see that economics truly is woven through all of the major issues that face our nation, that face our city. Economics really has become the major question. And so that is our focus on this show. We try not to be fooled by those who would have us focus on very minor, relatively minor aspects of economics. Oh, let's say things like money. If we equate money in economics, we miss the big picture. Economics, we're trying to look at the overall return, the overall good that occurs to society, whether that occurs through a financial transaction or through use of natural resources, through use of human capital. We want to look at all different aspects of capital. We want to have a very broad-based definition of capital, because that's what capital is. Capital is a store of value. And when we undertake a project, whether that's in our personal lives, in our businesses, the way we make a living, whether it's our government and our other businesses undertaking projects. We want to make sure that we account for use of capital. And those businesses and those activities that have tried to externalize, that is the word, costs that are rightfully theirs. Let's take a mining operation that dumps huge amounts of mining waste into a river and says there is no cost for that activity. That's a cost-free activity. We say no. It may be that our country needs to engage in mining. But the only way that we can determine fairly if that's a good project is to understand all the costs. And we have to add all the costs in to the project. For too long in this country, projects and activities that rightfully have costs, that not rightfully, but naturally have costs, they've tried to take those costs and put them off on the public in order to show higher returns from the project than really exist. So this is a show that's dedicated to looking at the full and true costs of our projects. Only when we do that can we determine if a project is worthy. And of course, right now, boy, there is a project that is under discussion, I would say, in our country. So it's a little project. It's been in the news lately. What is it? Why? I know there's so many of them. I mean, where do you start? I mean, the banks. Calculation of carbon costs. A drop in employment, rapidly rising unemployment. You could start anywhere with the economic issues and the projects that we're facing. Huge numbers of projects. And you know, those projects have been with us for a long, long time. It's not as if they suddenly reared their heads, right? It's not as if the public schools, everyone just noticed, oh, you know, the public schools need some help. These projects have been there. They've been there for decades. And there have been many people, let's face it, who have been trying to bring the nation's attention to these projects. Let's fix the public infrastructure. What happened to our mass transit systems? They're gone or dilapidated. What happened to our public schools? They were built 100 years ago. No additional capital has been put into them. Can you imagine if you live in a 100-year-old house and no upkeep had been done on it? No improvements had been done on it? Can you imagine if you bought an automobile 100 years ago and never changed the oil? And yet there are those in our society who say, what do you mean public schools? They got built 100 years ago. You don't need to put more money into them. What do you mean the New York subway system? It's a great system. It debuted in, I don't know when, 1875. It was the wonder of the world in 1875. You know. Look, it still gets a lot of people around, but it ain't exactly young. And on and on and on. These projects have existed, and a lot of people, me included, have tried to bring the nation's attention to the fact that these are good projects, they're high-return projects, they can be demonstrated to provide high returns, and we're not making investments in them. And what's happened? Well, the dominant political powers, call them what you will, call them Reaganites, call them conservatives, call them the mainstream, whatever, just whatever word you want to use. Maybe Democrats, who knows? I don't know. In my lifetime, at least dating back to 1980, although the the philosophical argument has been going a lot longer than that, since before I was born. The philosophical argument has been that government cannot be entrusted to either A, raise capital, and B, allocate capital. Right? Let's talk about what's a financial intermediary? What's a financial intermediary do? First of all, what's a financial intermediary? A bank. Could be a commercial bank or an investment bank. Could be an agency like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Could be the government. Lots of different types of financial intermediaries. But what does a financial intermediary do? A, it raises capital. And B, it allocates capital. And what has been the philosophical thrust that really, until the election in November of 2008, was predominant in our country, and that everybody drank the Kool-Aid on? Not everybody, a lot of people, majority. Government cannot be allowed to either raise capital or allocate capital, because it'll blow it. It either won't raise it right, or it won't allocate it right. Usually the latter, right? What's the argument? Oh, government's great at taxing. They know how to raise money. But watch what happens when they try to allocate it. They're going to just blow it. They're going to waste all the money. Right? And when did that argument start? Oh, in the 1960s, when government began to waste money on things like medical care, social insurance for poor people, environmental remediation, right? That's when the government went wrong. That's when the allocation of the government went wrong. Right before that, the government could do no wrong. Well, I wouldn't say couldn't do no wrong. There were an awful lot of conservatives opposed to the New Deal. But you know, right? World War II, oh, rah, rah, they got it right, right? They ran a great war. So that was the argument. The attempt to make everyone believe that government is utterly incompetent at allocating capital, and therefore should have no right to raise capital. And the tax cuts began. Now, I'm not against tax cuts. But let's just consider the most recent major tax cut. It occurred under George Bush, early in his presidency, $1.3 trillion in tax cuts over a 10-year period. And what is the new big project that the nation is facing? President Obama came on television last night, doing his utmost to explain what he's up to, what the goals are. We're getting some estimates of price tags for the reform of the healthcare system from the Congressional Budget Office, from Congress itself. The White House has their estimates. Industry groups have their estimates. And lo and behold, what's the estimate? You know, oh, it's about $1.3 trillion. The exact same amount that was issued forth in the Bush tax cuts. $1.3 trillion. What has the battle been about over the last 40 years and longer? It has been about who has the right to serve as a major, preeminent financial intermediary in our country. Is it the private sector, or is it government? Now, there'd be nothing wrong with saying both, right? Both. We need a healthy balance. We need a healthy balance. We need a healthy sector of private intermediaries, and we need a healthy sector of government intermediaries. Because each is better suited to certain types of projects. And when I say suited, I mean to the raising of the capital and the allocating of the capital. Right? It may be that government raises and allocates capital to a project, and private businesses are hired to actually fulfill the project. Electricians and plumbers and cement layers. Right? So there is a direct benefit to government projects. I mean, look at the military. Right? Huge amounts of government allocation of capital go to private businesses, specifically defense contractors. So what we're talking about here is the right to allocate the capital and to raise the capital. And the Reagan Revolution, more than anything else, was about what? It was about the philosophical argument that really only, I mean, the word is only the private sector has the capability to allocate capital properly, and therefore only the private sector should have the right to raise the capital. And how did the private sector get the right to raise the capital? Through tax cuts. Government raising of capital was shrunk through tax cuts. What happens when you get a tax cut? You get the money back, and you put it where? Under the mattress? That's pretty old school. Doesn't happen much anymore. You know, in a jar in the backyard? Pretty old school. Pretty risky. You put it in the bank. You get a tax cut, you get a check back one way or another. Either less of your income is taxed, so more of it remains in the bank, or you get a refund, and that goes in the bank. And the current crisis that we have been facing for the past year, which really began 2 years ago, February of 2007, when the wraps were taken off, the subprime crisis, basically. What have we found out as to who is behind the crisis? The banks. The banks. And what did we find out about the banks? What did they do? They took the capital that they had been allowed to raise through tax cuts. They took the capital that had been raised through tax cuts, and they allocated it to projects that they felt would yield returns. Now, what is the largest private infrastructure project that you can think of? Go ahead. What is it? What's the largest private infrastructure project you can think of? Yeah, you got it. Housing. Housing. Is it any mystery why we got a housing boom? Is it any mystery why we had vast amounts of the nation's capital thrown at houses? At more houses, at more bigger houses, at more bigger far-flung houses, flung all the way out into the desert, all over the desert. Big three-story houses in the middle of the desert, i.e. Las Vegas. And filled with stuff that was purchased on credit cards that were issued by banks. Big massive far-flung houses full of stuff in the desert and elsewhere, financed by the banks, using capital that had been increasingly passed to them through public policy initiated by Ronald Reagan and his heirs and associates. Under the argument, and frankly, it was a guise, that government will waste your capital. Right? This is what this is all about. Government will waste your capital. Government will waste your capital. Government cannot be allowed to raise your capital through the assessment of taxes or fees or whatever, because they will waste your capital. And at the end of that four decades, what have we found out? Fine. Okay, let's try it your way, guys and gals. Let's send all the capital to the banks and the other financial intermediaries, because, though, there are the MBAs. They're going to know how to allocate capital. These are the pros. Bankers, yeah, they know how to allocate capital. Got to put it in the pros' hands. And the pros did what with it? Every variety of consumer-based stuff that you can imagine, to the point where consumer expenditures became 70% of the gross domestic product of our country. 70 cents out of every business dollar spent in this country went for consumer items. What has happened is a discrediting of the entire philosophy that private enterprise, unregulated, right, by the way, part of the way they got the ability to allocate capital in any fashion and in any amount that they wanted was they tore all the regulations away. And what has happened is that the argument that private industry, unregulated private industry, is superior to allocating capital day after day, any day of the week, that has been shown to be false. That sector is good at allocating capital for certain things, but give it an overdose of capital and it will waste capital just as well as any other sector, including the government sector. We need to be clear. Get behind the philosophy. Get behind the posturing. Get behind the social, buzzwords, the cultural wars. And what you have is a naked grab for capital. And why would the banks, and why would Reagan and so forth argue that it needs to go to the banks? Because they're getting paid. Right? The banks don't make as much when the government's in the mix on the project. They don't get their fees. The government provides some oversight. And the banks run on fees. It's a fee-based business. I know that. I'm a financial advisor. It's my job. It's my day job. I try to do the best job I can. I try to make my fees fair, but let's face it, the financial world runs on fees. And this was about fees. Because if you have the right to raise the capital and you have the power to allocate it, you're going to be in the mix there getting the fees. Ronald Reagan was about fees. That's why the government couldn't be involved. There couldn't be any fees. Well, here we are, taking up the issue of health care. And I have an independent, insurance agent. I'm self-employed. I buy my health insurance for my family. It's an individual policy, and as you probably know, if you have an individual policy, buying an individual policy is totally different than being employed by a company. They have the right to ask you any question in the medical book. They want to know every pill I've taken for the last 30 years. They want to know how many pills my 2-year-old has taken. Because they want the right to not insure me. Well, we got insurance. We've had insurance. And in the mix, I try to have an insurance agent to try to help us fend off perhaps some of the more predatory aspects of the insurance company. And we went through a succession of insurance agents, and none of them were very good because, frankly, there's not a lot of interest in this part of the business. It's hard to find an agent who's interested in doing individual health insurance. You know, it's become kind of an agency backwater in the insurance business, right? They'd all rather do big corporate plans. That's where the money is. Dealing with me and my wife and my two kids, you know, there's not much money there. But we found a good one. We went through two or three. And no sooner do we find a good one, and we've had her for about 6 months, then I start to get, in the past couple of days, right-wing emails from her. She's hysterical. Obama is going to sign death warrants for the elderly in this country. You know, Tom Daschle is a tax-evading senior killer. This is coming from my professional insurance agent. And my wife and I are thinking, we got to get rid of this person. This person's interests and viewpoints are not aligned with ours. This is one of the reasons why I'd like to see a business directory on kpft.org. Because we in the KPFT community, we need to be able to find each other. Why do we want to do business with somebody who starts sending us stuff that, you know, the President Obama is going to be killing seniors if we have a healthcare policy? This is the kind of lunacy that's now coming out of the woodwork. And so here's the point. Here's the point. The very people who have been behind the ideological foundation, the political action, and the business commerce of wasting vast amounts of capital over the past 40 years, culminating in the largest boom and bust in our generation. Let's be clear what a boom and bust is. It is first an overcapitalization of an area, followed by a desert of capitalization. The political philosophy that was responsible for boom after boom after boom, and boom combined with bust is called a bubble. They now want a seat at the table to tell us how to allocate the next round of capital for the next round of projects. I'm amazed that President Obama has not yet stood up in front of the American people and said, hey, all these people who are telling you that we can't take on additional debt, all these people who are telling, I mean, he's kind of said it, but he hasn't really said it. He hasn't said it in a way that would cause a lot of people to turn around and look at some others and say, who the hell are you? But they have the chutzpah, after 40-plus years of inducing the country to blow vast amounts of capital on ridiculous and wasteful projects. Let's not forget the wars. They now want a seat at the table. Their voices should be heard about, A, how do we raise capital for the remaining projects that have been ignored for the last decades? Healthcare, energy reform, education and school reform, mass transit. They want a seat at the table to tell us how to raise the capital. It should be taxes. It shouldn't be taxes. It could be debt. It can't be debt. It can come from the Chinese. It can't come from the Chinese. The government can print the money. The government can't print the money. Right? All those are financing methods. They want a right to say how it's financed. And they want to tell us how the project ought to be done. Public option, no public option. Employers have to provide coverage, they don't have to provide coverage. Healthcare delivery will be capitated and reformed, or it won't be. Carbon will be regulated, or it won't be. All these things are projects. They want a right to say, again, how capital will be raised and how capital will be allocated. Whenever you get confused by politics, You know, when you're confused as to who's doing what and who's recommending what, just stop and say, let me think about this. Who is arguing for the right that they should be the ones to raise the capital and they should say how it should be allocated? Then you'll see. This is the New Capital Show. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, if you want to call. 713-526-5738 is the number. www.newcapitalshow.com is our website. This is 90.1 FM KPFT. Back in a moment.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1 Houston. The time is 3:30. It looks like we've got some storms coming in from on the west side of Houston. So if you're out there and about, be sure and take your umbrella. Stay tuned for more of the New Capital Show with host Leo Gold.
Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I saw Gene Cernan, who was one of the astronauts. Of course, getting a lot of coverage these days is the anniversary of the moon landing. I can't remember. Has it already happened? Offshore, yeah? The anniversary already passed? What was that, a couple days ago, something like that? Yeah. And yeah, that was a big moment. No question. That was an impressive technological feat. The Apollo program and the push to get men, humans, first into space and then near the moon and around the backside of the moon and then finally onto the moon and back to Earth was one of the great technological feats of humankind. But what did we find out? What did we find out from manned space exploration? Well, I know there's been some technology offshoots, rocket technology, satellites and so forth, radio signaling and technological devices, miniaturization of things. Lots of things have come out of it from an industrial standpoint. But in terms of space per se, what did we find out? Well, we found out it's very, very inhospitable out there. And it's very expensive to send humans. Because we got to take care of them, right? And it's really bad PR when we send humans up and they don't come back. And I think that it's clear, if you were to soberly assess one of the main results of the Apollo program, it would be that we did it, we went there, and we should stop trying. That's my assessment. And look, I grew up loving astronauts and loving space, and I collected, I don't remember what, patches and stuff. All the patches, right? The patches would have the names of the astronauts. I knew the names of all the astronauts. I knew the names of all the NFL teams and all the astronauts. But, you know, as you grow as a person, you have to put aside childish things. As we become mature people, we have to understand what is a good project and what is not. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, has just opened a new stadium. And regardless of the fact, you know where that, you know what I used to collect on the NFL? You used to go to IHOP. Remember the little helmets you could get at the International House of Pancakes? A lot of you may be too young or too old, I don't know what the word. But they used to give out these little plastic helmets, and I collected them and I had a little case. I mean, I was crazy about the NFL. Now I look at Jerry Jones building a $1 billion plus stadium in North Texas, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and it sickens me. because I'm an adult. I have a sense of perspective and I have an understanding of what a good project is in this country. And all the arguments by the owners of the NFL that they make jobs, it rings hollow because they're not the kind of jobs we want. Jobs where we pay an athlete $20 million a year and then a bunch of other people to show up on Sunday to hawk peanuts, sodas, and other junk food, that looks to me like not a healthy ecosystem. And jobs to build a giant coliseum that's used 15 times a year plus for a few rock concerts doesn't look to me like as good a use of capital as it would be to improve public schools for children who are struggling and can use them every day of the year. You know, call me whatever, but that's how I see it. And that's coming from a kid, from someone who used to be a kid who collected NFL helmets and astronaut patches. So when Gene Cernan, former astronaut, says, "We got to get back to the moon again, and we got to get to Mars," I look at that man and say, you didn't learn what you should have learned when you went into space. What every one of those astronauts, if they were mature people, should be doing, should have done when they came back was say, folks, we did it. It's impressive. It's inspiring that we went there. But we got to tell you, our lives are here on Earth, and they're only ever going to be here on Earth, and we've got to take care of the Earth. Yeah, some of them said it. But you still got an awful lot of Gene Cernans out there who are coming back and saying, we got to ante up tens of billions of dollars more to send people back to the moon and back to Mars. This is the same power establishment that has wasted capital like drunken sailors for decades and decades. To me, they don't deserve a seat at the table. And if they get one, it's only by virtue of the good faith and good graces of those who have replaced them in power. And I would say to this point, Barack Obama has shown pretty good faith. That guy could turn any day right now and say, you know what? Get away. We don't want you Republicans. You have no say in it. You got us here. He isn't saying that. Let's go to the phones. First up, let's take Ron on line one. Ron, welcome to the New Capital Show. Ron, you're on. Nope. Ron, you there? All right, we lost him. Let's try John next. John, welcome to the New Capital Show. Nope. All right, I'd say at this point, once is an incident, two is a coincidence, three would be a pattern, so we must be having a phone problem right now. While we work on that, Ron and John, try back again. 713-526-57. Oh, Ron's there. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we got him fixed.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, I'm sitting out here having a driveway moment listening to your show. I didn't realize they had changed the time on it.
Yep. Is 3 p.m. work for you?
Yeah, 3 p.m. works for me. Works real well.
Works for me, too.
Okay, cool. I was just waiting for you to come to the conclusion on the initial part of your... it's about time someone said that the Republicans have no right and should have no say in what's going on. People who are responsible for getting us into this situation should be completely ignored. And they're the ones that are screaming the loudest that everything's going wrong.
I'm not saying they should be... Let me be clear, Bill. I'm not saying they should be ignored.
Right.
What I'm saying is that they should be coming to the table and asking for a seat with humility. And, that's the word. That's the only... With humility. Humility's the word. They should be coming with humility. And they are not coming with humility.
That's why I'm saying they should be ignored. Because they are not approaching it with a, we messed up, maybe you guys have a better idea, and we just want to be a part of it. They're coming with, we're the authority, we know how it should be done. And apparently they don't.
Yeah. No. And I'm not saying they should be ignored either, because what I'm saying is they're acting like children. They're children. What is a child? A child is a younger version of our species that doesn't understand totally when they have done something, have responsibility, and need to take a different approach. And they have to be counseled. You know, they shouldn't be ignored. We don't want to ignore children. But we want to try to get through to them that the way that they are approaching us is not appropriate. It's not appropriate. And we should be saying to them, let's be clear, you have been behind a political philosophy that has gotten us to waste vast amounts of capital. We want to hear what you have to say because your political philosophy may be reformed. You may have a perspective that is valid. You may have life insights and experiences that can help us as we plan the reform process. But sending me emails that say that Barack Obama is going to kill seniors with death warrants isn't that. So get out of here and try again.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with that.
Great to have you. Thanks for the call.
You.
Okay, we lost some people. Who did we lose before? All kind of phone issues. Let's take Judy next. Hey, Judy, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Good to hear you in the afternoon. Two things. I'm a nurse. I deal every day with insurance hassles, and it breaks my heart the number of people who are struggling with not having appropriate health care and the waste that we have in the way our insurance system is, that there are just so many forms and it's so confusing, and doctor's offices waste incredible amounts of time just trying to get the coverage that someone's already paid for. So I'm glad that hopefully we will get health care reform.
We will. It's going to happen. I promise everybody we're going to get a bill.
And it's so good to hear a sane voice. And I appreciate your comments about football. And what do you think about the crazy way we Texans make football for high school students absolutely God?
Yeah. Thanks, Judy. Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
By the way, Jerry Jones, I think this is true. I think this is what I understand. Went to the city of Dallas to try to, of course, get Dallas to subsidize his new stadium. And I think Dallas told him to shove it. You know, Dallas basically said, hey, you want to leave Dallas? You want to become the Peoria Cowboys? And let me remind everybody that the most valuable, apparently, in the market for professional sports franchises, the most valuable sports franchise is the Dallas Cowboys. For whatever combination of reasons and history and fan attachment, the Dallas Cowboys are worth, you know, whatever, I don't know, billions, a couple billion, I don't know what the number is. So he went to Dallas and said, okay, well, we're the Dallas Cowboys, I want you to put up the money for the stadium. And they basically said, no, go ahead, go become the Peoria Cowboys. They called it, and so Irving, a much smaller city, has put up the money where they were playing before, where Texas Stadium, the prior stadium is. Irving put up the money, and as I understand it, there are an awful lot of people in Irving now who utterly regret having made that pact with Jerry Jones. On health care, I think we're going to get health care. We'll get a health care bill. I know that the Republicans are getting awfully excited that Barack is on his back right now. I would say don't buy that. I think that that's just a lot of posturing, and I think that a bill will emerge and that the president ultimately will sign it. As to Judy's point about waste, I can tell you that on my health care, everybody's got their own horror stories. I know that. And, of course, I have my own. I have an individual plan, and so we have to really watch how the insurance company handles our medical transactions. We've had two major ones in the past few months. In February of this year, I had a problem in my leg. I had sciatica, which is a problem that results from lower back, a disc problem in my lower back. And I went to see a neurologist. And before I went in to see the neurologist, I asked the nurse at the front desk, because I have a high deductible, how much are the doctor's services going to be for the day? And she said $250. I said, that's fine. And by the time I got out, the doctor had examined me and then run a couple of tests. They handed me a bill for $1,400. And that did not include an MRI that they then wanted to do in addition to that, another $500. And when I asked them why didn't they just send me for the MRI rather than the other test, they said, oh, well, you know, we should have sent you to the MRI and not done the other tests. You know, and this goes on every single day. This is what the president is talking about when he talks about paying for services rather than paying for quality. My son went in to have his tonsils removed and to have tubes put in his ears. And we had wonderful and excellent care. The doctor was fantastic. $500 was the charge by the doctor. The hospital, Texas Children's Hospital, charged $10,000. How? Well, they were allowed to charge separately for the tubes going in and the tonsils being removed, even though it was done in the same procedure under the same anesthetic. You understand? My son was wheeled in, put to sleep. The doctor did both things. The hospital was allowed to charge for two separate procedures. And Aetna, the insurance company, allows it. So this is what the president's talking about when he says we need a public option to compete with the insurance company, because the insurance company isn't providing any kind of regulation of rates. The insurance company says, okay, yeah, it's two procedures. We'll pay $10,000. And since I have a high deductible, I have to pay $5,000. This is what the president's talking about. These are real things. They happen every single day. Next up, let's take Bill. Bill, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, you there?
I'm here. Go on.
Okay, good. Listen, my phone goes out every once in a while, so hold on. Number one is I like your new time. It's better for me.
Oh, good, good.
I couldn't always listen to you in the morning. I would try to grab you some other way from the standpoint of a download or something. The other thing is on the Republicans, they're never coming to the table, so forget about it, but I think what he's doing is right. He finally showed some passion last night, and they congratulate you. You're showing real good passion on this, and that's what we need right now, is somebody to get stirred up and get this thing rolling.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Bill. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thanks. You know, conservatives and Republicans could come and say, and I think a lot of them are. Let's be clear. There are a lot of them dealing in good faith who are coming with ideas, who are saying, look, we're genuinely concerned about how this is going to be financed. We are concerned about the deficits. That is absolutely valid. That's the way to put it. We're very concerned about this, you know, and we realize that we have responsibility for the deficits that have occurred to date. We may have primary responsibility or substantial responsibility. We want to be part of the solution. Let's get in and let's talk about this to make it work for the American people. But there are an awful lot dealing in bad faith and who want to see reform fail totally as an effort. Most people agree that we need to reform the healthcare system. I think that is absolutely clear. Most people think the system needs reforming, regardless of where you are in the healthcare system. But if we want the right reforms, we have to have productive and constructive conversations. And I see a lot of unconstructed stuff coming out of certain segments of the population and the political power structure where they really don't have any credibility. Because as I see it, they are primarily responsible for the waste of vast amounts of capital. Okay, who's next? Let's take Bart. Bart, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thank you. It's called to add my voice to yours. We don't hear enough of this straight talk. You know, I heard today that the health industry is 16% of our NP. I think it must be closer to 26, don't you?
Yes. The healthcare expenditures in this country are 15 to 16% of our gross domestic product. That is roughly twice as much as other developed industrialized countries like Japan or the UK or Canada or France or Germany or Switzerland or Taiwan. I could keep going on. And life expectancies and infant mortalities in those other countries are superior to those in the United States.
Well, you know, I mentioned it mainly to set up the idea that those people have a lot to protect. You know, you're talking about the wealthiest people in America. You take all of the insurance industry and the medical industry, and they're a gigantic employer here in Houston, and lots of well-meaning, good people involved in it, of course. Don't misunderstand me, but it's going to be a terrible fight over this, of course, but wealthiest people have a lot to protect. But keep doing the good work that you're doing. I appreciate your being there.
Thanks, Bart.
All right.
Yeah, get on. Tell your Congress person. Twitter them. By the way, our Twitter address, if you want to follow me, I don't know. I started doing this Twitter thing a few weeks ago, and I'm just okay at it. It's funny how I don't seem to have much to say in one sentence. It seems like I should. You know, I'm here talking for an hour straight, but when it comes to one sentence, it's hard. But at any rate, if for whatever reason you want to follow me, Leo Gold NCS. Leo Gold NCS is the Twitter address. Our website is newcapitalshow.com, www.newcapitalshow.com. Please join our mailing list. You can do that right on the website. You can send me email or a whole host of other things. Back to the phones now. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left in the show. Next up, we will take J.R. J.R., welcome to the New Capital Show.
Leo, I love the new time.
It works for you. Good. I'm glad.
I would think it would be useful if we talked about commerce, industry, and finance as at least slightly different things. And for instance, never refer to something called the insurance industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not an industry. It's a financial institution. And it really works different from industry, which works somewhat different from commerce.
You are right on top of it.
I just croak every time. I mean, it's a joke. You know, it's like the sexual services industry.
Yep.
No, it's not an industry. It's called vice.
Yeah.
And they're old terms like bunco. You know, bunco is now about three quarters of marketing.
JR, you are right on it, and you are making what is a brilliant and very, very important point. You see, when conservatives, Republicans, whatever, opponents say the government shouldn't be, and by the way, there's a massive thunderstorm going on. I don't know if anybody's getting that in their car or through the crackling of the radio, but if we wig out here in a second, that's what happened, everybody. Yeah. The thunder is going like bombs over the studio right now. But JR, when people say the government can't run a public option, it can't be entrusted to do it, right? Under Reagan, the idea was, oh, they'll mismanage it, right? Now the new mantra by the other side is that, no, they'll do too good of a job. The government will run the private insurers out of business because they'll do it too well. The reason that government is uniquely positioned to do insurance-type operations is because insurance operations require a large pool of premium payers in order to spread the risk, right? What we've learned about General Motors is that even a company as large as General Motors didn't have a large enough risk pool to carry out its financial obligations under its pension plans, under its health insurance operations, and so forth, right? Even a company as large as General Motors went from 450,000 workers to 150,000 workers, and the remaining and shrinking, and the 150,000 workers who remained ultimately became responsible for paying premiums and pension contributions for the other older 450,000.
Yeah, so, but it had bond lawyers and credit rating agencies,
yeah,
and paper hangers and totally corrupt accountants,
yeah,
and tons of politicians who knew its pension obligations were off the charts and simply looked the other way.
Yes, but the big...
And they claim to be capitalists, but
yep,
they won't allow anything to go bankrupt.
Yep. JR, thanks.
I mean, if you can afford a lobbyist, you can't go bankrupt.
Yep. Thanks. Great to have you, JR.
Yes
to JR's comments, but I want to emphasize what we found out with General Motors is that even a company as large and ostensibly powerful as that had pension obligations and healthcare obligations, insurance obligations that were overwhelming even to it. When you run an insurance program, you have to be able to spread risk. It has to be a balanced risk profile. And that's one of the reasons why one of the suggestions right now for healthcare reform is that the insurance companies, one, cannot turn anybody down for coverage, which is what they do now, and two, everyone must be forced into the system, right? That way the insurance companies cannot turn down older people with healthcare problems, and younger people cannot be allowed to opt out of the system, because we need the younger people in the system who are healthy to pay premiums to help cover the healthcare problems of older people, right? And what what entity is uniquely in the business to get the largest pool of insured as possible? Answer, the government. So JR's right. We can't think of industry when we think of insurance. It's a different game. It's a financial intermediary engaged in forming risk pools. And in many times, the government is better suited to do that. And then you eliminate the fact that government doesn't have to earn a profit on it, and you have, in many ways, an entity, government, that is more uniquely suited to insurance operations than private industry. But the private insurers don't like that because they like making lots and lots of money. Just a few minutes left. Let's take Al on line three. Al, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yep, real quick.
Okay, one question for all these Republicans when they keep saying that, okay, Obama is going to spend so much of money and we're going to have a problem with our grandchildren paying it. My question is, if we don't come out of this, we may not have those grandchildren. What about that?
Yep. That's good. Thanks, Al.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call. I encourage everybody to, you know, when we think about debt and we think about the future projects that we want, we have to think about our children and our grandkids. Get a picture of them in your eyes. You love them. You want them to have decent lives. And there's two things that we want to bequeath to them. Good projects and a reasonable amount of financing debt on those projects. Those are the valid questions. And every project that we undertake in our personal lives, at the local level, in our businesses, at the national level, and all over the world, should be looked at through those eyes. And for too long, too much capital has been put in the hands of only one type of financial intermediary, private intermediaries. And so only one type of project has gotten done. For-profit projects that yield positive cash flow and generally have individual private benefits, but no public benefits. We must have balance in our society. We must have balance. If we don't have balance, we won't have a properly structured society. So that is the bottom line. Real quick, let's take Pone on the last call of the day. Pone, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, you're on. Real quick, Pone, Hello. You got about 20 seconds.
Okay, I would say a better way to think of it is not capital, wasting capital, but capital accumulation. It's accumulating capital from those who have a small amount to the people who have most of it already.
Yeah.
Secondly, General Motors refused and fought against Walter Reuther's idea that medical insurance would be across industries in a region.
Yeah.
In other words, it wouldn't be by each company, but companies didn't want that because they use medical insurance to keep people under control.
Yeah, that's right. Pone, thanks. It's a great point.
So General Motors is responsible.
Yep. Great to have you.
Thank you.
I think the whole question of why companies provide health insurance is totally valid. And frankly, I think that companies are not well suited and should not be in the business of paying for and covering health insurance benefits for people. We would have a much better system if people were responsible for obtaining their own health insurance. Then people would care about the insurance they got, how it's paid for, they would govern the policy, they would have oversight over it, it would be portable, it would be much better, much better. There is no reason whatsoever that health insurance benefits should be tied to employment. It's totally, totally illogical, and yet, in a way, we are stuck with it for the time being and probably for a long time to come, even under health care reform. Folks, we are out of time. That does it for the latest edition, the newest edition of the New Capital Show. I'll be back next week. I hope you have a great week. Until then, take care.
When it goes on the attack, the swine flu virus can't distinguish between a person who has health insurance and a person who is uninsured. So perhaps it's germane to talk about a national health care plan. Yes, we need to wash our hands to help keep the swine flu virus at bay. But longer term, we also need to cover all of the people in this country with affordable health care. What, you may ask, is so likable about a national health care plan? It saves taxpayers money. Everybody's in, nobody's out. You go to the doctor of your choice. you get the treatment you need, and at a price you, Joe and Jane taxpayer, can afford. When everyone's on a national health care plan, germs of the future will have healthier Americans to contend with. Over half of all doctors and over two-thirds of the general population support a national health care plan. Let's talk. Visit Healthcare for All Texas at www.hcfat.org.
KPFT, Houston.
This is KPFT General Manager Dwayne Bradley to let you know that effective Wednesday, July 22nd, KPFT Houston rolls out its new weekday program schedule. This is the biggest schedule change in nearly a decade, and in short, your favorite news and talk programs are moving to morning and afternoon drive times, while music gets you through the workday. BBC News kicks off the mornings at 5, followed by a new daily offering from the Pacifica Radio Archives at 5:30. Big changes include...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.